I'm Lou Smith, and this is June Nielsen. I think that it's kind of a big plus for us to be able to have our conversation about the forthcoming Lutheran Church and the possibilities of newness or the practicalities of merger, as the case may be, with June on hand. Maybe there are others here that I'm not aware of, but as far as I know, she's the only one among us who is in a position as close to the operation of trying to bring that new animal about as a person on the committee of 70 could be. And so with that introduction, I'm going to just turn things over to June, and she will kick off by sharing some of her experience on that committee with us, and perhaps some of her own envisioning about possibilities. So it's yours.
Now, first, I want to be very clear that this is me speaking, that I'm not sharing any kind of official pronouncement on behalf of the Commission of 70. This is just me here in community with you looking at some of the possibilities for the new church. And I would say at our first meeting, it was at St. Benedict's Center in Madison, Wisconsin. And I think people came in really having to test out what it was that we were there for. There were numbers of people who came in feeling they had the wind at their back, that they had been elected at the three church bodies conventions to come in and really try to put together a whole new thing. And there were others who came in feeling that they were elected to protect their turf, who felt very clearly that they came with directives, that they were representing the ALC, and they had certain things that they wanted to be certain were done. And people in the LCA that were looking out very clearly for their interests. And so immediately, I think there was a testing out of what it was that we were really about. Many people saying, look, we're moving into a whole new century. The church is faced with new challenges. We are not merging. We are creating a new kind of concept. And in a sense, in order to create a new concept, we have to remember our future. And by that I mean we, of course, have to look at our traditions. But maybe we're not going back far enough. Maybe we need to go all the way back to some of the real origins of the Christian community and begin to rediscover those models that are going to be effective to lead us into the next century, really. So that while we're talking about the church of our parents, we are envisioning the church for our children. And that is a very pivotal place to find oneself in. Another tension I think that has been present is between that attitude that says the church bodies very clearly provided for equalitarian representation, meaning minority groups, representation by women, a certain representation by clergy, some representation by theologians, but that we have been put together with a clear mandate from the people of God that they want voices to be heard from all segments of the church. On the other side, you have people who very clearly stand with the professional theologians who say this is too big a job to hand over to the laity. Or this church has come out of the Northern European tradition. We have much to protect. The majority of this Lutheran church is white, middle class. And we really don't trust blacks and Hispanics and Orientals and women to come in and have the same kind of influence in the shaping of this church that our trusted, trained men who have doctorates and training historically in the field might have. And I think that has been attention. There have been a number of things that have come up in the commission that have been argued and contested along those lines. What do we mean when we say authority? Who has authority to speak to the shape of this new church? Is that only in the hands of the intellectual or the doctorate or the bishop? Or do people who come in from various walks of life, who are perhaps more new in the Lutheran experience, but who also have a word to speak and something to say in terms of the mission and the shape? There's also some tension in terms of the model or the design. Some people are very highly committed to the episcopacy, the sense of the hierarchical, setting up of the Petrine voice, you might say. That voice which is given authority to be the church, to speak as the bishop, as the head. Others who would look more toward the Johannine community, the equalitarian representational discipleship sort of model, who would say that they are fearful of a super church, of an archbishop, of a national headquarters, that they would prefer to see more regional kind of empowerment with numbers of people who are working in the capacity of being elected heads of the church. But that be a distributed kind of function and not so coordinated in the national kind of model. We have, I think, had some, we've met twice, and I think at both of those meetings, the first round we had to go through was that we came in and there's this old, and you know you've all been through this, do we use Robert's Rules of Order? Are we going to be, you know, are we going to organize ourselves along those lines? Well, of course, that's a real power thing. Because a lot of people are very adept at Robert's Rules of Order. And you know the old line, the guy that runs the meeting is the one who got to the mimeograph machine first, who has something to pass out. Some of the people on that commission have done a lot of thinking prior to our coming together, and they have already strategized and already have some concepts in mind. And other people who are new at this game come in there, and there is the real danger of being snowed. And so some of us very early in the game disrupted this and insisted that before anything came to any kind of parliamentary decision, we had to have opportunity to thoroughly review and discuss, and that every one of the 70 had to have equal exposure to the proposals. And I think our chairperson has been very fair in giving equal recognition to people who want to stand up and speak. We've had small groups now that have had the opportunity to do exactly that. We have appointed task forces who are responsible to do in-depth work, one on the area of theology, one in the area of social. That was another battle we had. We felt that those should not be two separate concerns, but that they should be done in one task force, that the theology and the sociological context really should be done together instead of one group thinking in 16th century terms out of the old grab bag of the theological doctrinal kind of language, and the other looking into the contemporary crises situations for mission that the church is trying to deal with. We had quite a battle about that. The group that wanted the two won. We've also now got a commission that is working on the new design for the church, and that will be coming before us in September when we meet at Trinity Seminary in Ohio. I think I'm just going to throw that out as a beginner, and then I think we ought to open up to you to ask questions or to share with one another what may be some of your hopes, some of your fears, some of your resistance to this idea might be, some of the excitement that you feel about it, maybe something of what you might reflect from the region that you come from. Some of you are West Coast, some of you are Middle West. A small percentage, perhaps, are from the South, maybe a few from out East. Maybe we might just open up with some of those kinds of reflections.
Just to connect with that basic thing you said at the beginning, the kind of polarity between merging churches and creating something really new as an instrument of God's people. It's sort of a sense of the meeting, which one sort of seems to be holding the sway thus far as you see it. Is there that much momentum for the idea of creating something quite new?
Well, I'm going to be very candid about this. There is a sentiment that some of the people are just kind of laying back, and they're letting the segment that's into the whole new thing have the floor until we really get to the crisis of some sound, solid political realities, and then the sense is that maybe at that point they're going to stand up and be much more verbal and directive in their feelings. At this moment, I think the struggle is on for a whole new thing. I think there are numbers of people on that commission that are excited about doing something really creative and regenerative and exciting.
One of my fears, and that you've already expressed, I was asked by one of the people on our district who's on the theological commission to look at the first draft and give him responses. Mm-hmm. And that's nothing short of awful.
I agree.
And if there's no newness in that thing at all.
No.
And a church that doesn't know who it is in terms of its culture, who can't figure out what to do with subcultures, saying we're going to do our same confessions all over again, just is, that's awful.
I agree. I'm glad to hear you say that.
I want a second bill.
Where do you see the position of the local congregations in the new church? In other words, what will be the function, the strength, the place of the local congregation as opposed to the hierarchy? Or as contrasted, maybe.
Well, again, now I'm speaking for myself, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to go on record as speaking for the whole commission. I don't feel I have the authority to do that, but I can tell you what my sense of it is. In a very strange way, since we're all here and participating in this, I think maybe Holden might be a good model for the new church. By that I mean, I think there is here a sense of celebration, a sense of being rooted in word and sacrament, a sense of the people of God. There is teaching here. There is proclamation here. There is feeling of community here. There are numbers of congregations represented here that will go back to their own community and feel fed. And I think it's very important how we name ourselves. You get one image, isn't it? You know, it always just strikes me we talk about the church as having divisions, the division of this or that, or we talk about headquarters.
National office of police.
National headquarters or national office, or you go to the synod headquarters, or you go to the district office. I mean, these are very bureaucratic sort of Madison Avenue terms that come out of a business kind of mentality or imagery. We used to talk about, in the LCA, we used to talk about the president of the synod. But you get a very different image if you talk about centers for life. A center for life, which I see Holden as being, for example, is a creative, regenerative source for people to discover basically what it is to be human, to be in relationship. And I guess something of what I would envision would be if we could use those kinds of terms and we could be, as a church, throughout the country, organized around the concept of centers for life. And instead of having our headquarters out in New York or in Minneapolis, to have a holistic model in which we would integrate the body in terms of the functions of ministry. So that you would have centers of life that would be available to clusters of congregations within that region so that they could come come in for the very kind of thing that we're enjoying here. Lay training. You'd integrate your seminary faculty into those centers. You would have your media resource kind of opportunities. You'd have global concerns. You would have, have any of you ever been to the Tizay community in southern France? Okay. Where there are large, massive liturgical celebrations that are public witness, where people come in, where you'd also have training teams of dramatists, musicians, poets, liturgists who would be available to the area congregations in that region. In other words, another kind of thinking about the church as center for life, as a spiritual well. In an age where we're moving, where you're going to have information overload, you're going to have a lot of feeling of alienation and separation. Seems to me the church from the very first century has been called upon to model what it is to be human, to be functional and caring and interacting, and not to go to God as though we were trying to appease God, but to go to God in thanksgiving and praise. And it seems to me that this is the kind of live organism that the church ought to be. And instead of having divisions and departments and our seminaries here, our headquarters out there, our training centers over here, that we ought to get models that would be kind of gathered around what the Indians used to call the kiva, the ceremonial pit. If we say as Lutherans we're rooted in word and sacrament, then that ought to be central to our daily involvement with one another. So that your synod president or your bishop or whatever, your seminary faculty, your lay academy, your crisis resolution, your global, that all of these should be interacting. And then you would have, on a national level, you ever watch the McNeil-Lear report, where you have this large screen and you punch up instant interaction? Well, this is the kind of age that we're in, where we can have an instant network between these centers using technology, where you can have lay academies by punching up your cable television. I mean, we have a lot of things at our disposal that are part of our age that we ought to take advantage of and move in, so that we have a network nationally that can be an immediate touch with one another. And also, we could represent from each of our Centers for Life a national council that would, in fact, deal with the national voice for the church, be much more representational, involve laity and clergy who would be delegated to make ecclesiastical decisions on the national and international level. Our seminaries, for example. It seems to me that we ought to train seminarians not just in sort of provincial little pockets. Pardon me, Luther Northwestern. You know, but you go to St. Olaf, you go to Luther Northwestern, and then you get a call in Minnesota. You know, that's kind of a pattern. From my point of view, we ought to have concentrated areas of study, and some of these ought to be done in different parts of the country. And when you come to the moment of ordination, you should be ordained before a national board who has certain criteria for professional ministry and for mission. And once ordained, you are ordained into the church, subject to call anywhere in the United States. Instead of these little pockets of kind of provincial, regional loyalties that do not really understand the breadth and scope of the church in America. Now this is June talking. This is me. This is not the commission.
Over here.
Yeah.
I was wondering if we have this merger that creates a brand new church.
Yeah, now we're not supposed to use the word merger. It's a bad word.
Yeah. The LCA and Evangelical.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And it creates something new. But we still have to deal with the rest of the Lutheran church in the world. Will they accept all this? So what would the ramifications be for all the other Lutheran churches around the world in terms of this crazy thing that's been created here that doesn't look like anything they know? There's still an interaction going on there, but would it be acceptable?
Well, what do the rest of you think?
My question would be, what is it that would make it acceptable to me? And then that's what she's striven for, sought. If it's word and session,
Because my understanding that if you say you follow the Lutheran confessions, you can do any crazy thing you want in the world, the Lutheran community will accept you.
A little louder, please.
Okay. Turning up
the volume. Yeah.
If any church that accepts the Lutheran confessions and says they do, really can do any strange thing they want and will still be accepted by the world Lutheran community, as I understand it, am I correct?
There's already really worldwide a wide variation of organizational structures and systems and titles, and some churches ordain women and some don't, and some have bishops and some don't, and some even use the word Lutheran and some don't. So I would think that it fitting into the Lutheran, into the world scene, it would not particularly be a problem.
Yeah, even at Dan's confessional level, that's a loose item. Once you get past the Augsburg Confession and the Small Catechism, there's a lot of juggling that goes on. The Scandinavian churches, to my knowledge, have never counted the formula of Concord as part of the confessional writings, and they probably use editions of the Book of Concord that include it because that's what's in it or something like that, you know, but that's even a flexible one. So there is a vast
flexibility,
yeah. Please.
Have you seen the beginnings of any of the good things you're looking for? For example, the Uniting for Missions. Has any of that been talked about yet?
Not yet. No. I would look for some of this now to come up in September when we actually get to the matter of the new design. Yeah, I think the first two meetings have been really, you know, organizational and appointing of some of these task forces, and now we're waiting for some of the feedback from what they're going to give us.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel, what do you feel about the time element? I mean, both in terms of, will the commission have enough time to do all this work? Does it look like right now you're overwhelmed or what?
It's a big job, isn't it? It's there are going to be a lot of but I think we'll hit the mark. I do. I think we're planning to.
You set your schedules and it's going to be done.
I think we will. I think by the next national conventions, there should be a considerable amount to report back to the church bodies. And that's because not everything is happening on the commission. There are a lot of things happening between commission meetings on the various task forces that are working very hard and under a lot of pressure to do a lot of in-depth stuff to give back to us when we do meet. So. What are some of your fears about this, or do any of you really have questions about the wisdom of this happening?
I was going to put that question to June, because right about now in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, there is a national meeting of people who are opposed to this forthcoming Lutheran church, and they're talking about alternatives, I guess, for those pastors and congregations, I would assume. I don't know who they are, but...
Well, the one big factor is that there's still going to be two Lutheran churches in this country. The Missouri Synod has their cells, and this new church wasn't there.
Not to mention all the little fragments floating around.
But in terms of numbers, it's going to be the two. Uh-huh. So it won't be a unified, it won't be unity. And that's, something we have to look at.
Uh-huh. How do you see that as... I mean, I understand how it's problematic that there are two rather than one, but how is it specifically problematic?
Well, it's going to take much longer, many more years until there will be a one church. So, rather than doing it now, it's going to be many years.
Well, in fact, we're really looking even beyond Lutheran unity to Christian unity. Mm-hmm. We're looking for another Nicene Council, really. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's the hope would be that Christendom would find itself once more in union. So we're, you know, this is not the ultimate, just because three groups of Lutherans find their common meanings, but we have to even always struggle even beyond that into the broader ecumenical sense of finding one another in the Christian family.
A lot of times, whenever there's a large gathering or a large group of people like that, even though it appears as though the power is one place, the power is in fact another place. And when it appears that a group is really supposed to have a responsibility, in fact, another group has a responsibility. I guess the question I'm asking is, do you feel the Commission of 70 has the power to do what they're doing, or is a lot of the work being done by other folks outside the commission? Is the commission kind of a smokescreen or a front for other people doing the work? I mean, you're on the commission, you know what I mean?
No, I don't think it is, but I think that ultimately the decisions rest with the church. The commission is serving you and struggling to work through some of the issues and define them and bring recommendations. But finally, the decisions are going to be made at the conventions by the church at large. I mean, whatever happens in this new church is going to have to come back. I mean, the commission is really only there to struggle through and to do some of the work to bring to you. But the final issues and debates and decisions are going to have to be approved by the by all three church bodies,
yeah,
and that's
I
you.
I guess my question is not that. My question is the commission is to bring all that thing to the congregations. I understand that at a mm-hmm. convention level.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm wondering is, as a commission member, do you often feel as though you're being used?
No.
Or you're someone
no.
else is really pulling the strings
no.
someplace else?
No, I don't. I don't. I think there are 70 people on that commission that are highly committed. They feel very strongly that they are there as representatives of the larger church, and there isn't much that gets by. You know, there are a lot of challenges, and I really feel it's a very articulate, well-informed group of people that are taking their responsibility very seriously. I think they come, they've done their homework, they're very upfront, and I think the decisions that are made by the Commission of 70. I really do.
I'd be interested to know why merger is a bad word, and what is a more popular or positive or better word?
Merger, to a lot of people, is a bad word because it means just kind of piecing together three existing bodies. If you talk about a new church, then it means releasing a lot of vested interest and really looking and projecting toward something that is the best of all three, but more than any one. And to say we're merging means, in a sense, the position that I was sent there, elected in Louisville, to represent the Lutheran Church in America. And so that is who I am in that place. And I have to continually check out what's the best interest of the Lutheran Church in America. Where if I come there with the understanding that yes, I represent the LCA, but I am there really to formulate a whole new church. And that there are many things that we draw upon from the ALC background, from the AELC, but that this funnels into and evolves into the best that the three bodies can bring for something even better.
Genesis rather than merger.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Please.
This is under Gerd. I served on the Pacific Northwest LCA Synod Restructuring Committee. And one of the things I was concerned about was the requirement, not written, but it took place, that any church involving the pastoral call would have to take at least two candidates first from the bishop. It's not in the restructuring comments, but it exists. And as a result, we've set up sort of a politicized old boy network mm-hmm. around the Synod, and we find out who we want to call. So that the bishop plays really no part. Now, is that typical in ALC too right now?
Somebody from
the
ALC. Are
there any ALC folks around who like to come?
It's not typical in the North Pacific District, where probably 2/3 of the calls that are issued come not from the district nominations, but from some other process.
Your concept.
It isn't heaven either, by the way.
Thank you.
There can be a great deal of freedom in looking for successors in the church, in the pastoral job, around the nation. That's good. Has that been discussed by your commission?
I just typed it up.
Yeah.
And sent it out. I don't know where. It probably won't fly. It'll fly if enough people are concerned about looking at new models or different alternatives to the conventional, you know, this is the way we've always done it kind of attitude.
Yeah.
But it it seems to me that there are other ways to do it too, and they should be life-giving ways. Basically, the church is here to enable the saints to do the ministry, right? And I think there are models that can retain a national strength and voice, which is needed, but can also be those kinds of renewal centers and strengthening and educational and celebrative centers that I think are really going to be needed in the next coming decades. Yeah.
I guess there's three areas I can think of that the new church could be new. You know, one, and it's a question too, is to seriously again look at the order of the deacon, the deaconess, as our Roman Catholic and Episcopalian churches have, and I know we've turned that down in the past, the New Testament office of deacon, deaconess. The other is to be open to the possibility of orders, and that is like in the Roman Catholic Church, you have groups of people all over the country that are committed to a certain discipline that is a stricter discipline than the whole church, and right now in the Lutheran Church, if somebody starts doing that, they're suspect. People have to organize themselves outside without the blessing of the church, so you have competition between free movements. And we always have had in the Lutheran Church with a lot of suspicion. I'm thinking of possibly an order of peacemakers that would take a discipline of peacemaking that possibly the whole church wouldn't take. Is there a possibility that the new church would be open to bless these, just as St. Francis once went to the Pope and asked for the blessing on his discipline? The other, I'm concerned about this being an American church. So what can be done to tie this church more specifically to the world church? Could every congregation in the United States have a sister, brother congregation some other place in the world? The danger now, especially with the LCA losing Canada and making it specifically an American church, I think we have the danger of becoming more American and less universal, and which is symbolized always by that we always have an American flag in the chancel.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you have any comments on these three.
Well, one, I would think, if you went to this concept of centers of life, would be a very real component of that communal holistic sense, would be international exchange between, you know, visiting scholars and people from the cluster congregations actually having opportunity to go abroad and to be a part of that experience. I think that's very vital. I think also you would have, as a part of your conflict resolution segment of the center, would be keeping in touch very, very closely with what's happening in the Congress and the legislature and some of those political decisions that are happening, so that we would be able as a people to be informed in the international scene from that aspect. I think educationally, you know, even as we are doing now, there is need always to heighten awareness about the international dimensions of the faith and the family. I mean, all those things, I think, are there and are going to become more and more critical in the church, certainly.
What about orders? Could I just say that again?
About orders.
Orders.
That topic has not come up. It may very well come up. And I don't know. I imagine that there will be some study done on that. We've not yet dealt with that sort of thing, no.
Would you like to have her bring it up?
Mm-hmm.
My impression is that the, in terms of total numbers, the people who voted for this merger, whatever you want to call it, were lame. People that make up the local congregation. In what way do you picture that? What is the congregational format? What's the congregational life? Order of worship and such things as that which make up the a place to worship, a place to study, and this sort of thing. Seems to me that these are the people that are supporting this movement and their interests in terms of what the church primarily means to them individually. I have not made any comment about that.
Well, the parish.
How can a quote new church? Uh-huh. What's that going to do in terms of the local congregation and the individual parishioner, which is really what this church is for?
That's right. It's all of us can think of communities we can bring to mind where there's a Lutheran church in about every corner, right? Where there are congregations that have had their root and. You know, the candlesticks were left in memory of Grandpa, and this is where we were married, and my kids were baptized here, you know. Functionally, I don't know how long that can go on, you know, having seven congregations in a town of 3,000 people. I think congregation, by in its best sense of the word, is caring community. Community in relationship. And when you have in a town this kind of division of resources, let me just give you an example. I was a parish pastor in Ohio, and I call them the 12 tribes of Israel. You know, we had a big, huge edifice, big Luth. Have you ever been in Springfield, Ohio? I mean, you got all these, and they all had kings. And then the queen came. Took over one of the tribes. And it became very clear that there was duplication of effort, competition for members. Ecologically, it was not practical. We talked about this at some of the pastoral meetings. We laid the groundwork. Well, after I left, they got some of the biggest blizzards they'd ever had in Ohio. And I got one of the church papers. And three of the largest Lutheran parishes there in Springfield used some common sense. They said, well, this is ridiculous. We have these huge buildings and we're heating them every week for choir practice and for Sunday morning worship. We have three pastors each preparing a sermon. We have choirs rehearsing. We are putting out all this money. Why don't we, during the heating months, rotate the services and all of us go, you know, to this building this week, heat up one facility, have choir practice in that church, you know, rotate the pastors, have three services on a Sunday morning to facilitate the congregations, and just not heat up those other two. Well, you see, this is the kind of creative thinking between congregations that it seems to me bring about new understandings about how we as Lutherans love one another, demonstrate this kind of cooperation that the world might believe. This is the role of the congregation, to equip the saints, to model that kind of life, to generate that kind of spirit within the larger community that demonstrates that we are able to adjust and move and open ourselves to a new kind of caring for one another. Congregations will have to change, even as the church does.
All that is just common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, but how does that fit into this new church that I keep hearing talk about? That's just a common sense that we use a facility.
Well, that's one aspect. That's one aspect of moving into the new church, is learning how to function.
Well, we only have a common service book, and we can agree on a service book, and if we've got too many churches, too many buildings for the people we have, then we just use fewer buildings.
But you see, people don't think like that.
But they're the ones that voted for it.
Yeah. Okay, but you understand what I'm saying? There will have to be changes, and it's going to have to be not only attitudinal, but very practical. Ways in which we say, well, now we are no longer seven churches. We are one church. And what does that mean to us in this community? What does that say to us about being Lutherans, the body of Christ? What does that mean in practical terms? Very practical terms. And instead of dreading that and feeling that, you know, we have to give this up or we have to give this up, to begin thinking creatively about how we might use our resources in this community more productively and as a better way for the congregation to be the church in this place. In other words, this is an opportunity for us to grow and to change and to move into a new direction. It should be very exciting, not threatening. I don't know if that touched on your question, but I'm saying the congregation itself is the basic unit, is going to have to deal with adjustment and change and growth too. Yeah.
I guess just briefly a few things I'd like to throw out. From where I'm coming from in central Illinois, where I'm coming from is that church is still very much an immigrant church. And at least where I'm coming from, it's got to be a lot of thinking done what it means to be an American church and relating to the world and that whole thing. And there's still a lot of bitterness about what happened in 1961, you know, what the Norwegians did to the Germans and all this. And I just can't help thinking, my God, this is happening so fast, you know. I'm just glad that there are people that have a vision, and I think it's something we all need, is the vision of the future. I don't know, it just seems to be something that I keep in front of us too.
I had an aunt that dropped dead in her kitchen still lamenting that the Haugies merged. They're still back there with the old Haugie thing, you know. Well,
when you mentioned the situation in your former parish, it sounded as though there might be some feeling that when the new church comes, then it would mean larger congregations. Big is better. I'm a pastor on the West Coast, which is a lot different than Illinois. And congregations aren't as big as they are in the Midwest. We're not used to humongous places like Minneapolis has. Do you see that happening? That congregations, that the push is going to be to have larger congregations or to have smaller congregations, smaller districts, regional. You touched a little bit on I think regional offices, but to break that stuff down so that we don't have such big rather than much smaller.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Again, I think that in each particular situation, the challenge is to think as creatively as we can together in terms of relationship between the congregations. If that means that this congregation no longer is viable, you know, in terms of supporting a pastor or heating this facility or you know, if their mission really is not any longer that vital, then I think we have to go through a grief process. We have to re-examine that. We have to look at what is the way that we can regenerate the church in this place.
Okay, it sounded as to me that you were saying the 12 churches in whatever town it was a bad thing. I mean, it sounded, from coming from you, it was very negative, and I was wondering, is that necessarily so? Could a town have 12 Lutheran churches and make much more sense having 12 Lutheran churches than six, mm-hmm. if they're huge?
Yeah, if it was the Lutheran church functioning cooperatively in 12 locations. If they began to see themselves as the Lutheran church in this place, functioning...
Cooperate rather than compete.
Cooperatively in terms of ministry in this location, instead of 12 separate kingdoms that were functioning in a competitive, unrelated way that had no opportunity for cooperative or, as you said, common sense. In our part of the country, in Wisconsin, there are congregations that are paying, $20,000-$30,000 a year just to heat their building. And they use them maybe Sunday morning and maybe, a couple of evenings a week. I think the church is going to come to a point where they're going to have to look at that. We have old facilities that are taking tremendous amounts of money to just maintain. I think there comes a point where we have to sit down as the church, and say, well, now let's look at the assets we have in this place. Let's look at our expenditures in terms of actual ministry and mission and how much we are investing just in maintaining our identity and for what? See what I'm saying? I mean, those are going to be critical questions. Yeah.
Over here. And to follow up on this same point, I got the same impression that you were saying that bigger is better.
No.
And that's, I think, contrary to at least the tradition here in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Great numbers of the members of the Lutheran churches out here are Lutherans by accident. They happen to be invited to the church, like the pastor, and they stay there.
Mm-hmm.
They move to another town, they go to the Presbyterian church, they like the pastor, and they stay there.
Mm-hmm.
If it seems to be in our communities, at least, that you have to involve the people in order to get them to stay. And you're going to involve them, usually that means having a fairly small congregation. The bigger the congregation gets, the harder it is to involve people. And so if we're only talking about doing away with some of the smaller congregations, we may be just losing people to other churches.
Well, see, you're pointing out a very significant thing, and that is when you're talking about the Lutheran Church in the United States of America, you have regional differences that are very significant. In terms of size, tradition, ready, talking about the Lutheran Church in Minnesota is a whole other bag than talking about it out here in the state of Washington or down in California. And that's one of the problems that we're having to deal with in putting this new church in place, is taking into consideration all of these regional factors that you're pointing out. I'm saying, in a little town where there are 7 congregations, 2 in the country and 5 in town, and the population is 3,000, the church is going to have to negotiate about who they are in that place. Now, that's another situation than what you're talking about, you see. The church finds itself rooted in many different kinds of contexts. No question about that.
Okay, I have a lot of feelings on this. I don't know if I can really communicate it too well. But you brought up some things, such as the Center for Life. And today I was thinking about the church having orders. And that was kind of neat. Dan brought it up. But with that, some of the wording with orders, they have to go talk to the Pope, and the Pope dictates. And I have a problem with the hierarchy in the church right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this trickle-down stuff, and I don't know, if we had many centers like Holden, a place where pastors have to relinquish that the kind of relationship I see them having to their parish. You know, you talked about kings and queens. You know, here, and we've got the subjects, right? Or the kids. You know, kids to the pastors. If we had pastors change to what they are here as facilitators, and there's more dialogue, that's the only way I can see it. But I'm sort of pessimistic. I don't know if people are as innovative or as have as much forethought, you know, foresight to do what you want to do, what I'd like to see them.
Well, you know, in the Lutheran Church, ordination is not a sacrament. It has nothing to do with salvation. It's a matter of order. It's a matter of function. And
dispute. I want to register a dispute. I want to know everybody to know that not everybody agrees with that.
All right. It's all right. You don't have to agree. But I feel that you're wrong.
June, well, should we play Saturday Night Live? June, when you decide to read the apology to the Augustana, then come back and tell me I'm wrong. Paul's ordination is sacrament. That's okay.
Yeah. But there's a sociological phenomenon right there, how people orient themselves, relate to the pastor, you know, and your pastors.
Huh? It's a different issue.
Yeah, one of the, just a comment.
I can't see.
I'm back way up here. So I'd like to throw in two things. One on the ministry, and then the other one on, you raised the issue earlier, Jude, about mission. And at our last city convention, Herb Schulstrom, who was on the Council of the 70, we started raising that point to the convention as a whole, and I believe it was in his bishop's report, that we need to renew our vision of what it means to be the church and mission here at home and abroad, and that is our reason for being the church. And I grew up in a congregation that had like a maintenance mentality, and as a pastor, they had to call a new pastor because they were on the skid, so to speak, and his point blank question for them is, what is your reason for being here? You know, a large inner city parish. And to get back on the point of mission, why are we here as a people of God? I hope that can come through in the new church, that we revitalize our sense of mission and purpose for being the church, rather than having the maintenance mentality that we have to maintain some things just for the sake of maintaining them and not out of witness to Jesus Christ, you know, however that witness might take place. And then on your question, you know, about being a pastor or a hair pastor or whatever, in my home congregation that I'm serving now as Zion Lutheran, people have asked me to be a leader. And I challenged them, those who asked me about that, what they meant by leadership. And they had the hair pastor idea. And I'm trying to communicate, convey being a spiritual leader and a guide in terms of my role as a pastor and those functions. And so I kind of vibrated what you were talking about. That people want to see this strong leader in terms of earthly terms, and find it hard to understand what it can be to be a spiritual leader and guide. And if that could be somehow communicated in the church too, and what it means to be a pastor in a pastoral role.
I have, before I go, I have a one and a two here, and then at the end of that I'm going to put a snip on it just for time-wise, for two reasons. One, it will be 10, and those who plan to be here for an hour should have a chance to leave easily. Secondly, we have 10:15 prayer at the close of Bain here. So, Janet.
You asked June about hopes and fears, and many of my hopes are some of the things you've said tonight, and affirm you in your creativeness and your venture. My fears are is that those things can't happen, and I consider myself trusting, kind of hopeful person, and I don't have a lot of hope for that. Part of that is because, especially earlier in this hour, I've heard a lot of conversation that seems like us and them, and we are them.
It's true.
I grew up in the United Methodist Church and moved to Minnesota and became a Lutheran. And one thing I remember from being a United Methodist was that we are the church.
the church isn't a building or anything else. And it's real disconcerting to hear that us and them kind of language, that we've already bought into being the new church, I feel. I feel like I am the new church and that you're here to hear from me, to represent. It's true.
I'm a graduate from the Lutheran Bible Institute in Seattle, and that place has sometimes been called a grumbling, murmuring tank because of this merger. And instead of orders, can we use the word sodality? Will the merger have room for sodalities? I know that's been a real issue there in the California Lutheran Bible Institute. And I know Jack Eichhorst, the president of LBI, is on some committee to work with the conservative side of the church to bring some unity in that. What can we use that word sodality other than order? And is that a topic that's being discussed now?
It has not been yet. But I am certain that all of this will be coming up when we start looking at the new design. I'm sure all of these. And I just want to finish with this comment that I think it is terribly important for you to be thinking this through, talking about it, and communicating back to those of us that you have asked to work for you. It's very important that we hear from you and that we feel your support and that we get your input, and now is the time. And don't sit back and when this is done say, well, I wish they had done this or that. I mean, you talk about writing your congressman, write your commissioners. Get it to us, and so that we've got some fodder for them. Or if things like this intrigue you, talk with me more about it. Let's work it through. Let's come up with some alternative designs. Let's us get to the mimeograph machine first. Okay? Thank you very much.